Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. Today is Friday, January 22nd, 2021. We have a market that is very interesting here. We are going to at the top of the show say that this is going to be an expression of caution on our part on where this market is, and we'll go through the reasons. Cannot see it necessarily in the headline price action across major markets. The NASDAQ yesterday and the S&P posting new record highs for the cycle. What is there to fear? But we see some patterns across a number of high energy assets, if you will, speculative assets in particular. That's giving us some reason for caution, as well as some of the flow in the narrative. We had a recent little kerfuffle over whether the Fed is talking about eventually tapering. Of course, they've kind of pushed back against that. The ECB yesterday, President Lagarde saying that she's, they may not want to use the entire amount that they've been given extra to do asset purchases if financial conditions remain favorable. You have the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer rolling out plans for what to do about reducing the deficit come March 3rd. Just a few signs of pushback as COVID marches on. And we're just wondering if this is time for some caution here. We've seen some speculative excess, and we're seeing it. Some of these most speculative assets are tumbling a little bit. One of those being, and you have it on slide three, or just pull up your favorite crypto chart, and no secret to people trading crypto out there, just insane volatility in the crypto space. This is a logarithmic chart I've put on slide three, which is more helpful in showing the scale of this setback, 25% or so from well over 40,000 just a few weeks ago to under 30,000 overnight. It just makes you wonder if people entering the space that aren't these so-called hodlers, some of these people, especially anybody trading in leveraged fashion out on some of these dodgier exchanges, are going to be second guessing their commitment to this space. And Peter, to bring you into the conversation, we had a discussion as well as, is this a self-contained space, crypto, or are there some other sympathetic assets? And you had some interesting stuff that you put together on whether Tesla is sort of in a similar boat, and there's some correlation there. Take us through that.
Yeah, the market does actually look just starting a little bit from a high level, John. The market just really looked fragile this morning, and you've highlighted on slide two the NASDAQ 100. But I think if you look at the S&P 500, it's definitely taken out the lows from yesterday. And I think it's everyone's good guess where this support is. I think we could easily go to 3,800 again very quickly today if risk off continues. But coming back to your angle, we looked at this and we talked about the angle, and I started out saying in our internal call that given the move, and I had $100 billion wealth destruction almost yesterday in wealth from the Bitcoin collapse. You could hardly notice it across volatility markets. So it seemed like the market was pricing zero risk contagion at all. And then we talked about Tesla. Steam brought it up. He said I want to maybe buy puts on Tesla here. Not that I'm trading technicals, but I've put in here on slide four. You can see the Tesla chart, and it actually I had this idea a couple of times ago, and if you actually go through the internet, you can see that many people have actually pondering upon this connection between Tesla and Bitcoin, and Tesla also being the biggest position in the ARK Innovation ETF. I think Barron had a very good headline recently, which you can also see on slide four, that ARK's ETFs might be too popular for their own good. Basically, it is the ETF that is joining the biggest inflow of any ETF recently in the US. And it's just, I think it has ballooned to $25 billion of assets. And it's just creating a massive passive inflow and price support for a lot of the top holdings, which you can see on that small insert we've put in there. And I think Deutsche apparently yesterday in one of their investor notes with their clients also linked Bitcoin and Tesla together. And a lot of their investors in that survey said that it's much more likely that Bitcoin and Tesla would halve than double. And other have made this connection between Tesla and Bitcoin Bitcoin before. So we just, given Tesla didn't really move that much yesterday, I think, striking that cautious tone here, John, I think people should be aware that we could probably see a big move today in Tesla, because there is an overlap. And I saw a survey Charles Schwab did earlier this year where they have all the information on their clients, and they could clearly see that as you go down in the age bar, you have a higher correlation and higher position concentration of Tesla and Bitcoin. So there are definitely small evidence and signs out there that there is some connection there's between these positions. And Tesla, if Tesla goes down a lot, then it impacts the ARK investment. You could see a reversal of that passive inflow into the ETF, and then suddenly maybe you have a vicious cycle. And on slide five, this is definitely not saying scientifically. You almost laughed that I did it. people should not take anything, because we basically took Tesla and regressed it with the Bitcoin chain. So this is our log changes to the price of these two assets. And don't take the correlation for what it is. It's 0.4. It probably could have been any instrument. So there's probably a lot of spurious correlation. Basically, what I wanted to show with this is just it's that the two worst days in the crypto since January 1st, 2020 has coincided with actually two pretty big down days as well down weeks, I should say, for Tesla. And you see some of signs of the opposite as well. So strong positive days are correlated there. And then finally, John, I'll stop my spiel on this whole connectionist and striking this cautious tone. Goldman had a wonderful chart that was exposed on Bloomberg TV the other day, and we've put it in here on slide six. I think it's just wonderful. It's called Goldman Sachs Non-Profitable Technology Index. I'm not 100% sure about the methodology here, but my thinking here is that Goldman probably grouped all the, you know, the top decile or the top bucket of the most highly valued stocks on the Nasdaq exchange on an S&P 500, or, you know, maybe a broader indice, and then they stripped out all the companies that had positive cash flows and positive earnings, and they were left with a group of stocks that were highly valued but had no earnings, and they just computed the performance, and you have it right there. It's up fivefold in the past year. Quite striking.
That's very remarkable, and that leads to the question for many, and I'm going to put you on the spot. You know, how do you hedge against this? What's the action one takes? Well, you know, the most obvious thing is if you're extremely exposed to any drawdowns, is to simply take some chips off the table. You've got long only across the board on these types of investments, and then there's, you know, how to put up a hedge here or there. One can do that by some sort of long volatility play, if one doesn't want to, flush a position or two and deleverage. But there's also in FX. I mean, there's always ways to trade a lot of these things in FX. And usually it's simply something like buying dollar calls against a riskier currency. But also, just one of my favorite charts we were talking about earlier is in our internal meeting, is the Aussie yen chart. It's sort of a classic risk proxy, historically within the G10 currency space. I think it really also sits across the whole Chinese and outperformance, which has been a big theme that in all these themes could be up for a bit of a second guessing in the coming weeks. It sits across the reflation trade, so that big surge in commodity prices, and it sits across the whole yen and dollar safe haven trade. Plus, I just like the technical setup here, risk reward. And you can see this on slide seven. I put up a chart with the MACD, and you can see that MACD is quite thoroughly rolled over. We saw a peak that sort of coincided with and briefly extended beyond the prior peak at a similar level. And then we've sort of reapproached the top without much impulsivity. And it just sets up a good risk reward with stops just above there or on the options front. Options volatilities in Aussie yen are often a little bit elevated, but still have not risen any in recent history. So one could look at 1 month put options, maybe a figure out of the money as a way to hedge or as a speculative play on this. We're just going to take a breather here in the run on some of these trades. And that leads me to your space, Ola. I mean, commodities are losing some momentum as well. I know you talked a lot about grains this morning, and gold has been kind of really been suffering after that big blast lower, even though it's tried to sort of fight back.
Absolutely, John. And just when I look across my board this morning, we are basically seeing red, i.e. negative price action across the board. And we haven't really seen that for quite a while. I just, on slides nine, just put in the performance this past week. It's not as showing any significant amount of weakness, but just generally, apart from precious metals, the other sectors are all down in the week, led by the grain market. And I think that the reason why you have to, from time to time in the commodity space, have to stop up and become a little bit worried, that's when you see the speculative interest, when that's basically risen too fast and at based on obviously the assumptions. And as the assumptions change, and right now we're seeing some changing assumption in the grain markets because rain has finally hit some of these parched areas in South America, and that's that's adding some pressure on the so for some profit taking. And I just highlighted from the week to January 12th, this record long that we have in the commodities, 2.6 million lots. A lot of that is concentrated in the agricultural space, which is not the most liquid sometimes, especially when the market run into corrections, but also highlighting the elevated numbers we have in something like crude oil. On slide 10, just showing the weekly bar on the grains, and you can see both on soybeans and corn, we obviously come a long way. We rallied by more than 50% since August. So having a correction is obviously not an unusual thing. The unusual thing this time around is that we had traveled so far, so obviously that raises the risk that the correction may be a bit deeper than what we otherwise would be looking for. And then just finally also on the energy market, which has been probably the most resilient this past month, the Saudi Arabian production cuts, pandemic or vaccine led optimism for future demand. But I think the fact that we are seeing renewed lockdowns in China, which has been one of the big growth engines, and we're still not out of the woods here in the Western world, that just makes me a little bit nervous here. So I'll be keeping an eye on that 55 level today. That's the uptrend from November. If we do break, there is a potential 10% downside risk in the oil market.
All right. And another area we're looking at, so not really related to this whole reflation trade, but I think it's a fascinating issue. There's a couple of news stories on this, but the main one, Peter, being this Intel results and their plans to make their own chips. Take us through this, because this is a big signal change.
Yeah, it's actually a big story, and it goes back many years. So Intel was definitely the leader in the semiconductor space, and over time, their leadership was eroded by gradual advances in technology by Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company TSMC. And recently, Intel had huge difficulties producing these 7-nanometer chips, which TSMC succeeded in and taking the leadership on. And the initial decision by Intel was actually to begin outsourcing manufacturing and hold it all together and, you know, keep the IP inside, but get others to do the manufacturing. And you and I have discussed this before, John. I mean, there was a fascinating article recently. I don't know whether it was Wall Street Journal, Financial Times or Bloomberg that had it, but that, you know, Taiwan, South Korea, and Israel are leading the manufacturing game on semiconductors, and to some extent, sometimes there's more, and it's more than art than actually science, because it's a very fickle process when you get down to these 7-nanometers levels. And coming back to the Intel story and tied it all together, they posted after the close very strong results. I mean, it's a very firm Q4 result. The demand driven by work from home on computers is expected to be very strong for the first half. The outlook was quite good. Data centers were surprising to the upside, given the disappointment as one of the only ones in that space last quarter. So that was very good for Intel that they came back. And I think that's a positive story, a lead into the Google earnings and Amazon and Microsoft earnings, which we'll have, I think, next week. But then nevertheless, Intel shares were down 5%. It was all on this new CEO, Gelsinger, saying that they want to do their own production again. And by 2023, majority of all computer chips and would have to be manufacturing internally. And there's a lot of a national move here. You also mentioned the news, John, in our internal call that Samsung is planning to build the biggest logical chip manufacturing plant ever in U.S. history, $10 billion plant in Texas. So things are definitely changing in this space. And I think, I can't remember who wrote it, was Cohen, one of the opinion piece writers on Bloomberg. He had this very provocative headline, which, as you can see here, TSMC can breathe easy, Intel will keep making chips. And he's basically teasing and saying that Intel will probably not close the gap. And if you look at the numbers, it's very startling. So TSMC is spending CapEx-wise $28 billion this year, while Intel is projected to spend around 14 to 15. So they will have to double the amount of investments just to make on par, and they need to do it fast. So I think that's probably what was being discounted in the share price that day. You know, it's going to be costly if they want to pursue this own production strategy.
Yeah, it's gonna pressure their margins, and I think there might be some national security angle on this whole play. I don't want to get too much into that as to why Intel will continue to make its own chips. I wonder if they got a call from the Department of Defense or otherwise at some point in recent months. So I think I hope our message coming across clearly. It all looks great on the surface of things, and you know, the broader averages for where equities are, but we encourage some level of caution here, as we think there could be signs that this may be ready for a setback consolidation for some time. So let's look at today's eco calendar. A couple of interesting things. We've got the flash PMIs out of Europe. It really just does appear that the market doesn't want to pay attention to the reality on the ground right now in terms of these. So I don't think we get a lot of market reactivity, but you know, stuff to file away for further processing. We have the natural gas storage change in the US, as well as crude oil and product inventories from the DOE. And next week shaping up kind of interesting with the FOMC meeting on Wednesday, and then the first of the Q4 GDP estimates out of the US, as well as PCE inflation. One, just very briefly on inflation overnight, we got a Q4 inflation level from New Zealand. Kind of interesting for a currency that was up 4%+ on the quarter in trade weighted terms and 10% on real effective terms, that their inflation levels beat expectations quite considerably, 0.5% quarter on quarter. So that's, you know, that's essentially a 2%+ year on annualized rate, and then 1.4% year on year versus 1.1% expected. So we'll be watching those inflation numbers closely in coming months.
Maybe we should also mention overnight that we actually had the preliminary numbers on PMI, both from services and manufacturing out of Japan, which sits at the periphery of the Chinese growth miracle over the past 6 months. And they actually disappointed from...
Yeah. For services, China, it's no surprise given lockdowns. The expectations on the
manufacturing.
Yeah, on the manufacturing expectation was for flat. It just slightly was under that. But but again, it just feels like this market only wants to focus on, you know, T, if T is now T0 plus 3 months plus 6 months, until that changes and we start to see reactivity to incoming data points, then we just have to see what news items affect that outlook 3 to 6 months out, I suppose. But let's see. Next week will be interesting to watch for this potential for some more market volatility, as we expect, and the FOMC meeting could be at the center of that. Who knows? We'll take it easy. Be careful out there. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.